Beginning January 1st, 2026, Oregon will increase access to lower-cost life-saving cell and gene therapies for some people on the Oregon Health Plan, the state's Medicaid program. Joining me to help us learn more is Dr. Emma Sandell, the Director of Medicaid at the Oregon Health Authority. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Doctor, let's start with understanding the work that you do at the Oregon Health Authority.
Sure. So I'm the Medicaid Director, which means I help run the program for Oregon with a staff of a couple hundred folks that run all sorts of different parts of Medicaid, which provides health coverage to 1.4 million people in our state, including about half of all children and 40% of all births in the state, and other ways in which we provide healthcare coverage across Oregon.
Well, that's a significant amount of our population. How does Medicaid and the Oregon Health Plan work together?
Yeah, so Medicaid and the Oregon Health Plan are essentially the same thing. So Medicaid provides coverage through both medical coverage as well as a number of other things that people who are low income may need to get access to healthcare, such as transportation to and from doctor's appointments and other services such as that. And long-term care and home and community-based care as well. We call the Medicaid program in Oregon the Oregon Health Plan, it also includes the basic health plan and the Healthier Oregon program that provides services to people that are either a little bit higher income or who don't have immigration status.
Okay, so the branding is a little confusing. Are we saying that the Medicaid program that we hear constantly, all this discourse about nationally, is the same Medicaid program in our state?
Yes. Okay. The Medicaid program that we're hearing all sorts of national news about is the Oregon Health Plan in Oregon.
Okay, so if there are cuts to the federal contribution of Medicaid, how does that affect the Oregon Health Plan?
Yeah, so Congress is currently debating right now, and the House is looking at the Senate bill that passed yesterday that included quite a number of both reductions in eligibility for Medicaid, making it more difficult for people, especially people who are adults, age 19 to 64, to enroll in the program, having to prove additional pieces of information, as well as go through the enrollment process more often, which means that paperwork burdens and paperwork requirements could lead to people losing coverage even though they are still eligible, and as well as some budgetary reductions in the ways in which Oregon pays for the state share of the Medicaid program.
So what are the eligibility requirements now?
Yeah, so in order to qualify for the Oregon Health Plan, oftentimes a person needs to have low income. So for an adult, about 133% of the federal poverty level, which equates to about $15,000 a year. And that goes up if you have more members of your family. That's just for an individual. For people that are children or pregnant people or people experiencing postpartum, the income level is higher, about 200% of the federal poverty level. For people with disabilities, there are other ways in which a person can qualify beyond income, also looking at assets and other ways in which a person, the financial resources that a person has as well as their disability.
So this is literally the most vulnerable populations in our state.
Correct.
Okay, and so if there are cuts to Medicaid, what happens with the Oregon Health Plan and the people that it's serving here in our state?
Yeah, we estimate that between 100 and 200,000 people may lose healthcare coverage due to these new eligibility requirements. But in addition, the reductions in the ways in which we're able to fund the program might lead to other reductions in our ability to pay for the services and other other ways in which we provide Medicaid coverage in our state.
So does the Oregon Health Plan have other revenue coming in other than just the federal Medicaid funds?
Yeah, so Medicaid is jointly paid by the state and the federal government, with the federal government pitching in somewhere around two-thirds of the cost of the healthcare coverage. And then the remaining third or so, that's an estimate, is paid for by the state. And the state can use a variety of different state funds to pay the state share. And what this bill does is essentially limit what both the federal contribution as well as the ways in which we can pay for the state contribution.
Okay, so the proposed cuts, basically unloading the federal burden and increasing the state burden.
Correct, yes. As well as a lot of making it harder for people to stay on OHP or Medicaid coverage.
Okay, so it changes the eligibility requirements. It creates an onerous amount of paperwork that further reduces the people that will be on it. And it takes away funding. And it transfers more burden to the state. Do I have that correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay, do we have a good sense of why this is being done to the most vulnerable populations?
A lot of discussion in Congress and whatnot is that people who are enrolled in Medicaid beyond fraudulently or for reasons such as not wanting to work and that sort of thing. But we know that the vast majority of people are on appropriately. A person doesn't get money for being on Medicaid. And the vast majority of the fraud is in Medicaid and other healthcare programs is on the side of providers and whatnot because they're the ones that actually receive the funding for the Medicaid program. The member just receives healthcare, and as well we do know that almost all people are either working part-time jobs, making low income, or full-time jobs and making low income, and still qualify for Medicaid coverage, or they are taking care of family members, taking care of older parents and relatives, or other people in their community, in school, enrolled in other training programs. Only a very small number of people are potentially able to work but aren't working. And as we know, the economy is not always easy to find employment depending on where you live.
So it sounds to me, if I'm understanding you correctly, that the federal rationale is basically rooted in stereotypical tropes.
Right. Yeah, an understanding of what poverty means that's not always accurate.
Okay. My guest is Dr. Emma Sandow. She's the director of the Medicaid division of the Oregon Health Authority. Can you tell me how many people in our state are, like, in a number, are eligible for and receiving OHP, and how much is being spent annually for that?
We have 1.4 million people who receive OHP, or our Oregon Health Plan Medicaid coverage, and collectively it's about a total of $14 billion a year in funding to healthcare providers across the state for those services that those 1.4 million people use.
Okay, and so as I understand it, the federal burden is two-thirds of that and the state burden is one-third, is that correct?
Estimation, yes.
Yeah, okay. So what happens on January 1st with this cell and gene therapy access?
Yeah, we're really excited about being selected as one of the states that will be able to provide more low-cost, potentially curable treatments through what is known as the cell and gene therapy access model. Cell and gene therapies are an exciting new area of science that really address the underlying cause of disease and work to make sure that not only the symptoms of a person's disease are addressed, but also really getting to the causes of that disease and reducing pain for individuals and other really needed effects of disease. Right now, sickle cell disease is the treatment that is available for cell and gene therapy. But it, looking forward in science, it looks as though many other cell and gene therapies are coming on the market soon. And so making sure that these treatments are as low cost as possible can really increase access.
Why weren't these treatments available before?
So they have been available. The problem is that they are very, very expensive, which makes it harder for people to access these. And what this model does is actually allows the federal government to negotiate for lower drug prices with the drug manufacturers so that the price is lower, so more people can have access to those drugs.
Now, when you say more people, what's the estimate if we start with sickle cell, how many Oregonians will be able to access that treatment?
Yeah, we estimate that approximately 800 people in Oregon have sickle cell disease, but this particular reduced cost is only available to Oregon Health Plan members. And we do know that a disproportionate number of folks who have sickle cell disease also have Oregon Health Plan, but not everyone with sickle cell disease necessarily qualifies for Oregon Health Plan.
Can you summarize what sickle cell disease is and who it mostly affects?
Yeah, so it is a genetic condition in which about 120,000 individuals across the country, particularly people who are Black, African American, or Hispanic, have a very painful and debilitating blood disorder, which causes a number of other related health conditions such as organ damage, strokes, hospitalizations, sometimes even death, we haven't had a lot of treatment for sickle cell in the past. It was more sort of addressing the symptoms, and this cell and gene therapy is really the first that addresses the underlying cause of sickle cell and works to ensure that people are seeing significant improvements in their lives.
Okay, and starting January 1st, that'll be expanded underneath OHP.
Correct, yes.
What does a one-time treatment mean?
So often people with sickle cell have to continue to have a variety of very invasive procedures and treatments to address their symptoms. But with cell and gene therapy, they don't have to keep coming back. It's really just a one-time drug costs and treatment of a person as you get ready for that treatment, and then it has lasting effects. So a person doesn't need to routinely come back to the hospital every year or so. It really has long-lasting effects.
Okay, well, that sounds promising. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. Thank you, Dr. Sandel.
Thank you so much.